Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
We begin with Allah's name. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lahu. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. Nasta'inu, nastaghfiru wa nukminu bihi azza wa jalla. We begin with Allah's name, most merciful benefactor, most merciful redeemer. I bear witness there is no God save Allah alone, and that there is nothing worthy of worship or praise except Almighty God, Allah. And I further bear witness that Muhammad, to whom the Quran was revealed, is indeed Almighty God's most humble servant and most noble and generous messenger. All the praise is due to Almighty God, Allah. We ask him for help. We turn to him for forgiveness. We believe and we trust in him. Mighty and sublime is he. Ameen. Assalamu alaikum. Let his peace be unto you, the peace that only Almighty God can give, as we welcome you once more to the broadcast of The Female Solution. I am half of the host. I am Kareem Hamid, along with the executive director and the producer of The Female Solution, Naima Latif. Praise be to Allah. And we welcome everyone's presence here this morning
as
for
well
another.
As taking advantage of the opportunities, they're also addressing issues that are unique to those who immigrate to America and seek to establish new roots. So today we're going to take a look at how we unite in the diaspora. And we've got a special guest with us today, Fasika Alem of the United African Organization joins us to discuss the upcoming 2024 Africa Summit and Resource Fair this Saturday, May 18th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the University Church at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. And we're excited because we get to learn a little bit more about our brothers and sisters who may have just arrived here or been here for a few generations, but certainly are facing the challenges of bringing that slice of home and relocating and reestablishing a whole new community. So let us welcome to our show my dear sister Alem. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show.
I'm happy to be here. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, well, I'm excited to have this upcoming event because I think for many of us, especially those who may have been in America for a long time, we're not sensitive to the needs of our immigrant brothers and sisters who are dealing with some of the challenges of coming with a culture, a language, of trying to navigate this system, and for the most part, trying to find your community here abroad. So we're going to talk about some of these things and also perhaps some of the misunderstandings that many who have been long-time residents in the United States may have about the recent immigrant African population. So we're grateful that you have joined us today, and we're going to see if we can bring in our
Unmuted.
Co-host, Kareem Hamid, and our American Muslim 360 family. And Kareem, are you with us?
Yes, and I'm grateful to be here this morning. And to welcome our honored host, praise be to Almighty God, Sister Fasika Alem. The event,
yes,
as far as I understand it now, that will be held is connecting the diaspora, the African Summit and Resource Directory. You know, whether we realize it or not, we share similar circumstances, common history and similar circumstances, and we can share with each other our strengths, our good qualities, and learn from each other, too. Also, you know, there's much we can learn from the inhabitants of the continent of Africa. And we are definitely willing to share our gifts with those that travel to this country. And we welcome you with open arms. Whether we realize it or not, you are my sister, and I am your brother. And distance and time cannot separate that. No.
Absolutely.
So I'm quite sure that should be a very rewarding event held at the African Summit. From what I wrote down here, it says African Summit, a resource directory, a resource.
Uh-huh.
So we are resources.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I've got a question because I don't know how, and of course, Kareem is there in St. Louis, and I know here in Chicago we have a very large African population. We have a large Ghanaian population, a very large Nigerian population, and we've got a very large Ethiopian population. So we've got large communities in the city of Chicago alone, and people have, for the most part, been able to bring a slice of culture and benefit from it. We have the African Festival of the Arts every year, and I believe the brother who organized that is Liberian, I believe, who I've known for years. And so we get a chance to see a bit of the culture, but we don't always hear the challenges. And because I happen to belong to a global Muslim community that also large Nigerian and Ghanaian immigrants here in Chicago in specific. So I've seen a bit of the challenges, and possibly one of the things has to do with there is a distinct difference between the cultures, even though others who are from Europe tend to just kind of group everybody together. But what made you, first of all, tell us a bit about your organization, the United African Organization, and what are some of its goals in terms of perhaps bridging the gap and being able to come to some type of unity?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So the United African Organization is a not-for-profit based here in Chicago. It's actually based in the Woodlawn neighborhood. And we are, overarching mission is, of course, to support and empower the Black immigrant and refugee community across the state. And we do that in a few ways. One, we provide direct services. So we have immigration legal services. As you know, the biggest barrier that our community faces is the immigration system itself. So we provide support in that area. And then we have what we call our family support services, which encompasses essentially everything that is not immigration legal related. So supporting families with accessing public benefits, with with healthcare access, with housing and financial assistance, employment, education, and the like. So often, our members walk in with a variety of needs, and try to support with that, and also have a network of partners in Chicago and across the state that we can also refer participants to. And then lastly, we do public policy advocacy to advocate for policies that empower our community. A lot of it obviously is largely immigration related, but we also address other equity issues that affect both us as Black immigrants, but also affect other disenfranchised communities, particularly our African American brothers and sisters. So we work in coalition to address things like, creating a child tax credit so that families who live in poverty can get some support, housing access, language access, and the like. So those are the areas that we work in. But outside of our direct services, we also seek opportunities to build relationships and bridge the gap between those that we serve in our office and then the larger African American community, the larger Black community. And so this summit is one of those initiatives intended to bridge the gap. So it is our flagship summit. It's an opportunity to bring members of the diaspora together to dialogue and talk about issues that are important to us. As part of that, we have what we call our resource fair, which where we invite a number of our partners to table and provide information on the work that they're doing as well.
You know, one of the things that comes up often when the subject of immigrants is approached, and it really has been a real challenge for the Chicago community. The United States offers so much in terms of social services, financial services, and many times immigrants are able to find advocates for what's needed, language services and so forth. You know, English is a second language kind of services for those who may be coming, and English is not their first language. But there's also an indigenous discriminated against population that has trouble getting access to these services that are seemingly readily made available to those who may have recently arrived. And that creates kind of a conflict, because the question even was recently asked about the immigrants coming from South America, and, you know, being given housing, while there's a large homeless population, and many people say, well, where did this money come from? You know, how come you didn't have it for us? So when you arrive, are there organizations, or maybe that's something that your organization does, that finds out what the resources are and gets them to the citizens, and maybe that's something that the indigenous population doesn't have, and people, whether they're elected officials or whatever, telling them where the resources are, the reason why we don't get it. And some of the people who just came, they get it seems like the red carpet rolled out for them. What are some of the advocates for immigrants that you've worked with and that have helped get people resources?
Yeah, I think you make a good point. But, you know, migration happens in different ways. So speaking about, let's say, the African or the Black immigrant community in Chicago, you know, Africans, for example, started coming as students in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And so, you know, that was the first initial wave of folks coming with the intent to go to school and return, and just, you know, life happened and many stayed. And then you have Black immigrants that come as refugees, right? So when there is crisis in different parts of the world, the United Nations, they have a High Commissioner for Refugees. They designate certain individuals that are displaced due to either climate issues or conflict or persecution. And so they resettle those families. There's a resettlement process for families like that. Africans are oftentimes the largest benefactors of that program. In the Chicago area over the last several, you know, more recently there's more maybe families from Ukraine and Afghanistan that have been coming over the last couple of years. But prior to that, it's been families from the Congo, for example, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Sudan, Somalia, right, that have been resettled in that manner. There's also family-based migration, which accounts for the large proportion, the largest way in which Black immigrants get to the United States. So it's a family member here that petitions for them to come, or once somebody acquires a immigration status, then they maybe petition for their wife and their children to come. Then more recently, we've seen the influx of families coming across the border too. And and I know that the narrative that we hear is that it's only folks from Latin American countries, but it actually also includes Africans. And Haitians that are coming across the border. So, you know, we get asked, like, how do you even make it to trek up to the border from the continent? So people fly somewhere into Latin America, which has less restrictive visa requirements. And then they will trek. So they walk from Brazil, whatever methods that they use, buses, taxis, they, you know, many times also they're trafficked, right? Somebody is offering them opportunity to be transported for the exchange of money.
Wow.
And so they also are coming, you know, we've seen over the last year and a half, we've seen probably over 1,200 individuals in our offices alone.
Wow.
And about 700 or so just since last July. And so these are families and individuals coming from countries like Angola, the Congo, Cameroon, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Guinea.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's not often, you know, our numbers are relatively small, but when you still look at the issue, it's still a large number of families. And oftentimes because that's not part of the narrative, they often don't get the resources that they should be receiving.
So
go ahead.
What are some of the reasons that cause a person to flee a country? I mean, I've met a lot of students, so I know, of course, they're here as students. I've met people who have immigrated to, you know, expand their business. You know, they might have a business at home. They want to, you know, have an outlet abroad. So they're expanding a business. So those are people who aren't leaving in distress. But then there are people who leave their country in distress. What are some of the reasons that would cause people to leave and maybe even try to go under the radar and sneak in, so to speak, because of a difficult situation? What are some of the things happening?
Some of it is political persecution. It is individuals that may be engaged in protests or disagreements with the incumbent government in their home country, and therefore, you know, they may get detained and tortured, and so for their safety, they flee because they no longer feel like it's a safe space. In some cases, you know, in the case of Cameroon, for example, there's been a conflict that has been engulfing the civilian population, while the conflict is really between the government and a separatist movement. Mm-hmm. Civilians have been caught in between that and pitted against, you know, like, you know, if they think you're supporting one group or the other group, the other side will persecute you.
Wow.
Right? So they've had to flee for their safety. Similarly, Congo, you know, is in a very dire situation. So families are, you know, and Congolese also come as refugees, but we have seen some, maybe like they were outside their country and they can't go back, so they'll decide to come here, or fleeing, you know, Congo for the first time.
Wow.
And then sometimes it's economic reasons, because people are not able to find employment.
Yeah.
In a lot of the African countries, the population of young people is very large, yet there isn't enough employment, enough work for them to make a living.
Mm.
And when that becomes a struggle, then they will choose to leave. And, you know, people go in many different directions, right? There's our brothers and sisters that are trying to get into Europe, for example, through North Africa, through Libya or Tunisia. There are brothers and sisters who may migrate to United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia or places like that in search of work. And then there's some that also go to Latin America, right? Sometimes they we fly somewhere else seeking opportunities, and when that doesn't work out, then they'll try to come to the U.S. Many of the Haitians that came in 2021 and 2022 were Haitian families that had left Haiti about 10 years prior to that, 7 to 10 years prior to that, in search of work in Latin America, particularly tied to, I believe, the World Cup or the one of those large games, the Olympics or World Cup. It's probably World Cup. So there was opportunities at that time. But then later, particularly with COVID, work wasn't as easy to get. And as a result, they were also facing a lot of racial discrimination and mistreatment. And so they decided, and Haiti, as you know, is not a very safe space. So those families decided to come to the U.S., try to come to the U.S. instead. But I think your question about accessing resources, yes, it is partly because of because there are organizations that are set up to do the advocacy work. For example, we are a member of a larger coalition, immigrant coalition called Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, that is a membership-based organization, a membership-based coalition of organizations like us who support immigrants. Particularly across the state, is a very powerful actor in this space. Mm-hmm. Granted, we're underrepresented even in that space. We currently are the only Black-led, Black immigrant-serving organization that is a member of that coalition.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other Black-led organizations that are doing some of this work, the Ethiopian Community Association, there's the Haitian Coalition, and the Haitian Museum more recently have started to engage in this work as we continue to see Haitians and other Black migrants coming across the border.
Yes. Karine, you had a question?
Yes, I'm aware of what is occurring in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The main news sources are focused on Palestine, not to diminish the horrible atrocities that are happening in Palestine. I believe there needs to be an equal focus on the largest displacement of human beings inside of one border, and that is occurring in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The warring factions that's putting a lot of death and destruction on the civilian population. We know that the continent of Africa is one of the most resource-rich continents on the earth. My question and my concern is that although there have been the appearance of independence coming to certain African countries, but how much of the economic influence of the colonizers are still within those countries that have gained independence? There's enough resources for everyone, but, the exploitation of the continent and the various countries in the continent, I still believe that there is a foreign influence that's on the resources and the economic opportunities that Africa has to share with its citizens and the world. So my position is that those of us that are here in the United States, we with what we've been through, we should be able to identify and sympathize with those that are coming to this country as immigrants. Whether we realize it or not, We have similar experiences. We have a similar history. And I must say, white supremacy is still active. It's still, and we need to come together and address these issues, you know, and not fight among among ourselves. We welcome the inhabitants of the continent of Africa. They bring a rich culture, matter of fact, the countries in Africa are very diverse. They have many different languages, cultures, systems that they're operating under. So when we say Africa, it's not like it's one monolith, but there's much we can gain if we support one another. That's what I'm hoping that the African-American community begin to do, and the African from the continent, that we embrace one another, not stand off from one another, and share similar values that we can share with each other. I pray that we come to that position, because I really don't like the idea of there being an anti-immigrant movement in this country. The only non-immigrants in this country are the indigenous people that were here, you know.
Right. So, they didn't get here by boat yet. Well, you raised the point. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like our guest to address some of those things that have to do with, first of all, if Africa is such a rich continent, why are people struggling financially? You know, is there still a very large influence in colonialism? And is that even instigating some of the wars that are still going on? And another point you brought out, even about the ability of African Americans to empathize with the recent immigrants to Africa as part of the global struggle to overthrow and get rid of the whole white supremacist philosophy so that we're not still operating as if we don't have, when in fact you're coming from the continent that's really supplying everybody else's needs. Why are we still poor? You know, it doesn't make sense. So we got to take a quick break, and we'll come back and let our guest, Sister Fasika, answer these questions and more as we look forward to the 2024 Africa Summit and Resources Fair this coming Saturday, May 18th. And that's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at University Church at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. It's right there in the Hyde Park community, Woodlawn community, that whole area. And, of course, you're familiar with it. You know where it is. So come on down. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back with and take your quest comments. And we've got a call on the line that's got a serious question to ask about our unity. So we'll be right back. So just stay with us.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the Bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Sister Kalita Akbar Abdulaziz, Program Manager for American Muslim 360. CWSC is inspired by the visionary leadership of the late Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahimahullah Alayh, and his proposition that our communities need a studious group of persons, or an intelligentsia, studying our history and circumstances and envisioning a brighter future for succeeding generations to live better in America. In 1999, an important step was taken to fulfill the shared vision of structuring an intelligentsia with a national think tank capable of serving first our communities and then, eventually, national and global interests. We welcome you to American Muslim 360 listenership. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
The continent of Africa and having an impact on those who are choosing to immigrate here to America. And sometimes it's for opportunities and sometimes it's to escape. So, Fasika, you know, there are a lot of things, and Thrain pointed out some things that people know, some that we don't hear as much about in the news, the wars, the conflicts. What are some of the challenges for people who leave because the financial situation has been disrupted by perhaps war, maybe even famine or, you know, whatever the case may be? And how responsible are other outside agitators to creating that conflict that's going on in the country?
Yeah, I think, you know, when individuals get to the United States, we tend to face some of the similar challenges within this skin and racist system. For example, Black immigrants are more likely to be detained and deported because of their interaction with law enforcement, because of the disproportional interaction of law enforcement, the fact that increasingly Black immigrants are, particularly, let's say, in Chicago, you know, Chicago is a very segregated city, but the number of families that, the assumption is that most immigrants live on the north side of the city. While that is true to some extent, there is also a large proportion of Black immigrants who live on the south and west sides of the city. Therefore, the likelihood of interactions with law enforcement are increased because those communities are over-policed. And that trend exists around the country as well. So there are Black immigrants are more than three times more likely than any other immigrant group to be deported, detained and deported. When they are detained, they're also more likely to be mistreated in detention. They're 6 times more likely to be put in solitary confinement. to have, they're more likely to have medical needs withheld, to be forced to sign their own deportation orders. And so these are the similar treatment to what we know is happening to black and brown people, particularly black people in this country. In terms of immigration policy also, it's less favorable for black immigrants. For example, currently for people coming across the border, they have to use an app in order to register themselves, in order to ask for asylum. However, that app, one, requires you to have a phone, right, internet access.
Yeah, what if you don't have that?
And then add to the fact that it uses facial recognition technology, which we know does not work for our people so well. So these are barriers that are placed in front of them before they even get here. When Haitians were coming, and including now with the state of what Haiti is like, Haitians continue to be barred from seeking asylum and deported from the border. Back to the madness that they're trying to flee. And that happens to other black immigrants, Cameroonians, for example, who, because of persecution, had to flee, have been deported back, right? And there's documentation to show that when they are sent back, they face continued persecution. They're targeted, in fact. So the system is also stacked unfavorably for black immigrants. When Donald Trump was in office, he, attempted to end the diversity visa program, which is a program that allows for it's a lottery system. You apply and they select a certain number of immigrants around the world, and it's based on quota of how many people from that country are here already. So countries like Nigeria are not eligible. Countries like Jamaica are not eligible.
Wow.
Mexico is not eligible either because they say that the numbers of those individuals.
We have enough of y'all already. Is that what they're saying?
Yes.
Wow.
But it allows for migration for a lot of other Africans. And Trump wanted to end that program. And he was not successful. But what has happened since is it's become very difficult from those who win those lotteries from African countries to get the next step of the process done at the embassies in their home country. Mm-hmm. And immigration is sometimes a very discretionary process. So when you go to apply for a visa, they can tell you, no, we're not taking anybody today. Or the person in front of you may just decide, I don't like you, so I'm going to deny this visa request. It's very discretionary. The same way when you sit in front of an asylum officer here in the United States, when you're coming across the border, they could decide to deny your asylum, even though you have a good case.
Wow.
And so you can imagine how that will not favor black immigrants well, because the immigration system is like other systems in this country is racist, and it's based on the ideologies of white supremacy. And, you asked about what happens on the continent. There are a lot of external actors, right? France, currently even has its hand in many West African countries. We've seen some change in a few, such as Burkina Faso and Niger, who are working to end that dependency on France, or should I say the dependency of France on those countries, right? Because France has no mines or gold reserves in their country, but they have the most gold, and where are they getting that from? And so to end that relationship, and we're, rooting for them and hoping that this really ignites the continent, right, to push back against those hands. When we talk about the conflict in Congo, there's definitely the hand of the United States in that conflict, because they are arming and supporting those rebels that are creating the issue in Congo. You know, when you look at Sudan, you have the hands of the Arab world in the conflict that is happening in Sudan. So all over the continent, that is the trend. And then we have ineffective leaders by design. I think, you know, the external forces also support dictatorship and mismanagement for their own benefit. And so that's the pattern. I think that's across the country. We've seen from history what happens to leaders that are really effective in galvanizing the country and making sure that resources are used appropriately, right? We saw Patrice Lumumba and Thomas Sankara and, you know, across, we've seen that everywhere. So, but I think it's, you know, Black people around the world need to wake up, and those of us that are here, I think, can definitely be actors in how our government here engages on the continent.
Well, one question before I go to our phone lines. Is there or are there elected officials that the African immigrant community has relied on to stand up for their rights, to voice their concerns about the racial profiling, the targeting for deportation, you know, making it difficult for people to actually get into the country and become legal citizens, all those things that are often race-based? Is there or are there across the country particular elected officials, congressmen, and so forth that are sensitive to what's happening in Africa and are working in your behalf?
Yes. You know, I mean, we're not, luckily we're not the only organization that is working on this issue. And in fact, there are other Black immigrant-led national organizations that are also engaging legislators. You know, we have organizations like the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. We have the African Communities Together. We have Haitian Bridge Alliance, which are national organizations that do also work with federal level legislators about these issues. You know, since we're a state organization, we work a lot with our representatives from the state. You know, so we work to engage leaders like Congressman Jackson or Bobby Rush before him, as well as Congressman Danny Davis around these issues, as well as our senators. But we've always looked to our Black leaders to be our voice in those spaces as well. So at the state level, for example, we're connected with the Legislative Black Caucus to talk about these issues at the state level, and have actually really galvanized to support us, you know, including, you know, they recently created a Black Immigrant Task Force at the state level to study at the state level the needs of Black immigrants across the state. And that was because we had allies, we had supporters within the state legislature that saw that need, you know, heard us and is working towards that goal. So we've been really fortunate to have a number of relationships with Black Caucus members at the state as well as at the city, who have been our greatest advocates.
Well, we've got a guest for our second hour that's going to be talking about some of the various actions that have been taken to address racial discrimination and the historic racial discrimination But I want to bring her in a little early because she has a few concerns about what often comes up as perhaps a schism, a source of division between the long-term residents of African descent who have been here and who came here under duress, and then the recent African immigrants that have a different set of circumstances, even though we're all facing racial injustice. But sometimes we find ourselves on different sides of the political fence based on, you know, what particular elected official may be highlighting and what's needed by that particular immigrant community. And so I guess my question is this upcoming summit going to give us a chance to address some of these old wounds between the old and the new, so to speak? So let me bring in my dear sister, Mama D, y'all Nubians, to ask some of these global questions when it comes to our relationship as an African people. Welcome to the show, Mama D. Thank you so much for coming on into the conversation.
Well, hallelujah. Greetings. Wayo and Yah Shalom, Grand Rising. As a Crimes Against Humanity descendant voted by the United Nations in August of 2001 and Jim Crow genocide survivor, we're the only arrivals that are not immigrants. Coming, everyone that came over here, whether it was from Poland or Ireland or Haiti or Ghana, they came from a country that had a land and a language, and they came by choice. Being stolen from a continent and held as a movable property thing called chattel for 246 years until 1865, followed by 1866 until May 17, 1954, we were under segregation law. And the Brown versus Board of Education decision said that segregation laws were unconstitutional because they only existed to keep the status of the Negro gap, not black and brown, not people of countries, but to keep the status of the Negro down, and it harmed their children to the extent that they said it is doubtful that they would ever overcome it. America is real good at using the language barrier. Instead of saying the Negro children had received irreparable harm, they said it's doubtful that they'll ever overcome it. So we have had to live for 70 years, a complete life span, to deal with that doubt. And it was, so I said earlier, Jim Crow genocide survivor, because if you are 6 years old when you get this harm and it's doubtful you'll ever overcome it, it is serious. And if it's serious, the definition of genocide is causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. And as a matter of fact, every single category in the definition of genocide, we have received that as a people. And when you have had 345 years of federal laws against you as a group, it is totally different. And only the American, the indigenous Native American Indians and the indigenous Native American Africans, if you're in the country, when it becomes a country, you are indigenous. 1619 came before 1776. So we are indigenous Native American Africans. And the people living on the continent, Ghana, they do not claim the continent. They claim a country. And it is, we're claiming the whole continent of African Americans. When we are American Africans, as I said, Only the indigenous Native American Indians and the indigenous Native American Africans could be born in America and not be citizens in the land of their birth until the 14th Amendment described citizenship. And we were allowed to be citizens, or you're supposed to be naturalized. And when we are saying we are all, everybody is from African descent. We are the parents of civilization. We are the only ones that can can make love and create one race of people, because black is the most dominant. However, if whites wanted to make one race, they would have to make war and kill up all the blacks, all the browns, all the yellows, all the everybody else. So there are some differences, and you're having a African summit. When we see that, we know you're not talking about African Americans. You're talking about the Africans that came here from a country by choice that had a land and a language, and we are still languishing on the bottom of everybody, because we have not, like the Native American, American Indians, they have received exempt status, cultural rights, sovereignty, land, and money as a people. We need the same kind of repair. But unfortunately, we are recognition stars, and we want to be just like everybody else and get in with the black and the browns. And no, we have to get in with ourselves. I certainly do.
That brings up a question that I have. Because, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who have come here recently and asked them, what did they learn about us? Did they know what happened here? And a lot of people don't have any reference to what happened to those who left. You know, I mean, is it taught in school? So, is there a theory about who you're going to run into when you run into these long time absent, you know, African relatives that are living here, like Mama D said? What are they teaching? What did you learn in school about the people living here? Tell us.
Yeah, so I was going to say I can speak for myself. I actually went to school. I did elementary school in Ethiopia and did my high school in Kenya. And what I learned in history class in Kenya was not even about Kenyans, let alone black people across the ocean.
Mm.
Right? They taught us about the Chinese and the French Revolution and the Bolsheviks in Russia and World War One and World War Two. And nothing, I don't recall, not one lesson about black people. And so I would assume, because most of Africa was colonized, that the educational system is largely like that. And now I could be wrong. Maybe there's a caller who knows different, right? So that was my experience. I did not learn anything. However, in my household, I had a father who wanted us. He himself had the opportunity to go to England for schooling and experienced racism, And so when he had children, he wasn't very overt about it, but, you know, my biggest, most profound memory is when we got a VHS player in 1987, and the first tape he put in there for us to watch was Thriller, but the second tape he put in there was Roots. And it changed our life. And so,
you know,
Yes, Kareem, you want to say, and then we'll take a break.
Yes, ma'am. You know, we have to reconcile with history. It's not as if the African American that was an item in chattel slavery that is unique. The whole continent of how do we think gold got to Great Britain? Who mined that gold, and under what conditions? It was under the condition of slavery, the Haitian is an excellent example of the lingering distaste for African people. Haiti represents the first country, the first area where there was a successful slave revolt headed by Toussaint Louverture. And they were able to run the French from out of France. But at the same time, France assembled an armada of gunships and surrounded Haiti and threatened them with death if they did not agree to pay reparations to those that had enslaved them. Right now, Haiti is paying huge sums for that so-called court case that was held between France and Haiti. We mentioned the Democratic Republic of Congo. But if I'm not mistaken, that's the only place on earth where cobalt is mined. And cobalt is the necessary mineral that activates our computer systems and high tech. But they are using slave labor, little children, digging in the earth with their hands to get that. So we cannot separate slavery. I mean, you know, the African slave condition, the only difference between the form of slavery that was in Africa, especially study King Leopold of Belgium, the cutting off of limbs, the massive takeover of life. They enslaved the majority of those countries that are in existence now. They were under slavery also. So I hope that we as African, as descendants of the continent of Africa, that we can at least join on that basis of wanting liberation and independence and self-determination. But I recognize we have corrupt leaders in those countries that are usually bought off and paid to allow the foreigners to continue have access to the resources of the continent of Africa. I pray that we can come to some kind of uniformed position concerning that. We are exploited here, whether we realize it or not. We are still being exploited. So it's my prayer that as African people, that we can look at our circumstances and we see we're all in the same boat, come from the same set of circumstances, and not look askance at each other and cause competition. Well, they are giving them such and such a thing, but they are not giving us. Well, that is a divide and conquer formula. Let us not fall prey to that. So at this meeting, I hope that some of these things can be addressed, that how can we move forward as a whole people to establish for us an independent self-determination. I pray that we don't fall into schisms. It used to puzzle me. How come this African country is fighting that African country? Well, there is a hidden hand behind that. And that hidden hand usually comes from out of Europe. I'll stop right there, my sister. Thank you.
And you know, that's the thing that I'd like us to talk about. I know I said the first hour. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes, maybe for the next 30 minutes? Because, you know, we really got to get to the meat of things. And I'd like to find out what are some of the things that are going to be discussed at this conference, and what do you hope to come out of it based on all of this that we still have to figure out? And how do we empower ourselves to change the situation without expecting somebody else to do something other than ourselves to make a change? So we'll talk about that when we come back. Hold on, Mama D, because we're going to come right back and deal with this education issue, because, you know, Fasika, you brought up a major thing, which we still deal with, which is our miseducation, the reason why our perspective is skewered. So we'll be right back after this quick break. We want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. You can connect with us on Blog Talk, or 515-605-9891. You can connect with us on the other Blog Talk channel on AM360, or you can call us on the on-air radio network at 727-731-5192. That's 727-731-5192. We want to hear from you. So we'll be right back after this quick break. So just stay with us.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us. or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you. This is Dr. Constance Shabazz for American Muslim 360, announcing a new program from our parent corporation, CWSC, called Eyes on Our Communities. While all are being challenged by the current public health environment and policy of spatial distancing to prevent the spread of COVID-19, some older Americans are being urged to stay at home, who could unfortunately wind up being out of sight, out of mind. Social isolation itself can be a threat. So CWSC is asking believers nationwide via its National Volunteer Human Resource Network to be an extra set of eyes now for our seniors to help ensure they're okay. If you're a senior or a disabled person and need assistance, please call 910-317-0297, and one of our volunteers will be assigned to call you and help connect you with government agencies, nonprofits, civic or faith-based, and other institutions addressing elderly and disabled needs. We don't want a single person to fall through the cracks. So please call 910-317-0297. Help is just a phone call away. The public service announcement from the CWSC and AM360.
What is American Muslim 360, you ask? It's hard hitting.
You don't have any peace, and our people have been tricked. And if you've got money, which really is an artificial measure of wealth is more. than just how much capital you have accumulated, huh? We know that money is just a medium of exchange, man-made, and it can change and has changed. Grown men, I don't carry cash. You're an idiot.
Informative.
The federal government now spends more than $500 billion a year, or roughly 14% of the federal budget, on doing business in the private sector with contractors. In addition, contract goals are established for women-owned businesses and small disadvantaged businesses, which is another name for minority or black-owned businesses.
Your health and well-being.
I want to talk about high blood pressure one more time today. Especially in our community, high blood pressure is so prevalent. It is a silent killer, and usually there are no symptoms at all. And if we don't really take care of ourselves, it's bound to get out from under us in an unexpected moment.
Alucard Ann.
So in that regard, it's also said in Quran that it is the best of time to pray, and it is during this time in your reading of Quran that it will be a witness for you. So if you can imagine that if we are reading Quran during this time, that it will be a witness for us.
So to answer your question, American Muslim 360 is well-rounded. It's all about the people. And it's all about the deen. And that's why we are the number one Islamic blog talk radio station in all of America.
Between and choose to stop being manipulated. And we have the power to choose to create everything from our own currency, which is what Mark Gaddafi was working on, but that's another show altogether. But we have the power to refuse to be controlled by outside forces if we simply join together and with a united purpose of healing the land, helping it to produce without cruel slave child labor, without sex trafficking, which is also a horrendous thing happening. And all of these things that it takes a corrupt spirit to keep doing, and we can't just blame Europeans because they couldn't have had access to the continent unless we gave it to them. So how do we take responsibility for the mess that we made with our infighting, whether it be because we're recent immigrants against long-term residents or people from different countries fighting each other? How do we take responsibility for creating the unity without, well, if white people are not doing this and white people stop doing that? Let's ignore that. What is this conference going to do to help us?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I don't know if you can see me. My camera, you can see me? Okay.
Yes, yeah, the controls we can see.
Okay, it's just black on my end. But, thank you for the question. And I think what this summit really intends to do is bring people together to have these conversations. It's not easy to work together if you're not in relationship with each other, right? Even when we think about organizing and public policy work, the core part of that is the relationship building component. And we're hoping that this summit can do some of that. And so the summit is designed similar to, we have panel discussions. We will have three panel discussions. The first, obviously, because immigration is such a large component of the challenges within the community, that has always been a discussion within the summit, but we've also tried to make a point to include other topics that can be uniting or unifying for the diaspora. And so our morning panel would be talking about what it's like to be an immigrant or African within the diaspora and some of the challenges that presents. We have actually a short documentary from a brother from Benin who, when he arrived in the United States, was detained in immigration detention for several months. And so he'll speak to what that experience can have a short documentary to share with us. So that the mourning component provides kind of a view of what it's like to operate within the immigration system with immigration as, you know, in the backdrop. Our afternoon sessions tackle two conversations that I think can be unifying. The first is about faith and community in the diaspora. So we are, you know, the panelists will explore how their faith background, their religion, their faith traditions shape their experiences and influences their understanding of their purpose in the community and what they do to, you know, affect change in the community work that they do, how faith informs that work. So we have a speaker representing the Christian faith, we have a speaker representing Islam, and then we have somebody representing those that may practice traditional African beliefs, such as the Ifa from Nigeria, for example. So we'll have those perspectives as part of that. And then our other panel in the afternoon, which runs concurrently to the one on faith and community, is women, talking about women in the diaspora and how their experiences within the diaspora also influence their understandings of their identity and purpose, and really looking at women as political, economic, cultural, and religious leaders. And so similarly, you know, this I think is a conversation that can engage the whole diaspora, regardless of where you're coming from and how long you've been here. You know, and that panel actually also includes someone who will speak from the Afro-Latino perspective. We have an Afro-Colombian who also happens to have, has created the African Diaspora Museum. And so we have a few women that we have identified to have that conversation. And the goal is to also engage the audience, right? That the conversation among panel members really is inclusive of the audience and really inviting the audience to participate. So even if you are not on the panel, that your voice also matters in that conversation. So we invite everybody to come and really engage with us in those conversations. And, you know, this is an annual event. Through these relationships and the partnerships that we are developing, we can also broaden the conversation and also, you know, create space and time for the difficult conversations, right, in this and upcoming.
It sounds like it's going to be quite comprehensive, and I think one of the challenges that we face is that after we presented the thing, how do we get to a point of solution? And I think we've got, let me see if I can. Bring back. Well, I want to make sure that I mute the mics if anybody's not speaking. First of all, let me ask, do you have any callers on your switchboard, Kareem?
No, not at this time, but I invite those that are on the AM360 board to press one on your phone. I will unmute your mic. Okay, we have a caller at this time. I'm going to open up the mic of 727-741. Martha Nyla Abdullah, the Executive Director of the Community-Wide Shura Conference. Assalamu alaikum, Martha.
Alaikum assalam, and greetings of peace to everyone as I start with seeking refuge with Almighty God from the devilish mentality that can arise at any given moment to divide, and thankful that we're connecting through the words we're using this morning to show the gratefulness and the it's not simplicity, not a simple matter, but I'm grateful to be on this morning and to be a part of this life and truly wanting to understand, as Naima, you mentioned, solution. And we all will have our own way of coming forth through the understanding and our ignorance. I want to put that there because there's a lot of ignorance from my part. But I want to ask the question, as there are many organizations here in the United States and we are forever burdened with the barriers and the complications of this life and then the history, I do believe as one possible solution is when we, as we need to connect, and thankful for this part, can we open the doorway to the level of what has separated us? And I'm coming from as an organization, community-wide Shura Conference is open to always having open communication and then getting into those areas that we need to work on to reach solutions. And this particular one I'm speaking about is we've adopted as an initiative faith and family. And I was wonderful, happy to hear the expression you just shared, the information you just shared. I apologize the name. It didn't come clearly to me, Naima, to our guest.
Fasika
and to Mama D.
Is a... our guest, and
okay.
You know you've raised some good points,
yes,
Sister Martha, especially when it comes to having a solution in mind, and I know that they'll have, you know, diverse groups, diverse religious groups, things like that. But let me. She of course presented several things that will probably be on the agenda. What do you foresee, particularly when it comes to the family thing, because that tends to be where everything begins and ends. There are a lot of things that have happened on a very personal level. Throw this one out here. You have a lot of people that have come here. And wanting citizenship, and men who have married women who are citizens and then left them or you know, got them pregnant and left them, whatever. And
good morning.
Unfortunately, that's what the two communities have when it comes to how are we going to build trust on a personal level. Is that the kind of discussion that can be had at this conference?
I'm supposed to be a guest on the
I think there are definitely opportunities for those types of conversations. For sure. Yes. And I think the conversations that these panels will have can also address family issues or challenges within those contexts. You know, as I also mentioned earlier, building these relationships enables us to plan to have those conversations, right? That is recognizing that, yes, these are sore spots we want to address, and how do we create space for those conversations? I definitely agree that we need to do healing work in our community also, like these restorative conversations. And so this is part of, you know, the goal of the summit, but also our part of our interest as an organization. We were always intentionally had our office, for example, on the south side of the city because part of our interest was building the relationship across the diaspora. So, yes, these conversations can be had at the summit.
Yeah, and I think that's an issue that comes up when it comes to the interaction. Another one, and there was a actually one of the kings of and Nigeria came here, I think it was the year before last, 2 years ago, and he gave an address at the Rainbow Push National Headquarters with Reverend Jackson and so forth, and he made a statement that he apologized for the role of his nation in the slave trade, because that's still a sore spot. And this is what I mean when I say we have to take responsibility for our role in creating this mess that we're in, the fighting that led to others being able to take prisoners of war and exploit them and then create a whole international business out of it. It wouldn't have been possible if we hadn't been fighting in the first place. And there are families that got wealthy off of selling other people, the slave trade, just like there are European families that descent who are wealthy from the slave business. So we're still in pain over that. And there's an attitude sometimes of recent immigrants that they look down on those who have been here, who've gone through the struggle, some of the things that Mama D mentioned, you know, the trauma that we've endured over time in this place and how we've had to fight to make it possible for other black immigrants to come here and be respected. And yet there's still that pain because we haven't addressed the unfinished business of how did we get over here in the first place and the betrayal, and can we heal from that hurt? Can we admit that there was some wrongdoing, and can we stop blaming Europeans when in fact we started it among ourselves with the fighting? Can we take responsibility so that we can then take power back and make the changes within ourselves when it comes to how we treat ourselves? What are your thoughts on that?
I think the biggest challenge there is that people are not aware of history.
Mm.
Right? So we have to somewhat prepare people for these conversations by providing context and understanding history, right? You know, what it's also not just fueled by a lack of knowledge in that area, but it's also fueled by miseducation, as we talked about earlier, right? When the images that we receive on the continent of our brothers and sisters here is oftentimes a negative image. And therefore we arrived with these preconceived ideas of who a people are when we know nothing about the history of a people, much less our own history. And so, you know, trying to find those opportunities to educate. And you know, we hope that the summit does that, because when you're in relationship, you can also have those conversations where you're teaching each other about each other. And so our goal is to foster the environment that allows us to do that in order to have those very difficult conversations.
Yes, definitely. And I think that it's good that this summit is coming when it is. This is a time for us to really examine the power that we have with a global system of communication. We can talk directly to each other now. So there's no excuse for us not knowing or not listening to each other and not trying to understand each other's situation. And I think we who have been here are not as sensitive as we need to be to those who are just arriving. And we need to talk about what are our common problems, and then what are the situations that we are creating among ourselves that we are responsible for creating? Everything from the, like Kareem mentioned, the corruption that happens, you know, the whether it's a scam on the internet that and how many people have gotten the letter from the so-called Nigerian king that's saying, I just need your access to, I need to transfer a bunch of money, and if you just give me access to your bank account, then I'll give you a piece of it. I mean, how many people, everybody's had that scam letter. I mean, why are we doing that to each other? You know, but people are people, and yet it creates the distrust. And then things that you hear, I mean, if I heard constant, if I was seeing constant images of drug dealers, jail, killings, I'd be afraid of African Americans also, because how do you know what's true and what's exaggeration? How do we have more of these kinds of discussions where we can talk to each other and tell the history? There's a lot of people that know that there was war going on in various nations that Kareem mentioned. They had no clue because we don't hear it. How do we share information on a regular basis? Is there a way we can do that so that we can keep each other abreast and informed and keep on developing solutions?
Yeah, good point. I think shows like yours go a long way in facilitating those conversations. But there are also parallel shows within the African community. One comes to mind, it's called the Progressive Mind Show. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's a young brother from Ghana who really has been doing a lot of work to bring communities together to have conversations that highlight our, you know, our commonalities, but also conversations that we want to discuss where we differ on things or where we may have issues that we want to address in different things. So I think these types of platforms are very important in the community, and so it's important to do our part to expand the reach of platforms like this. But we could also create, you know, take opportunities for where they are and do these types of events. So we would appreciate, you know, if to know about other similar events to the summit where we can bring our community, where we can attend, and similarly a way for us to share the things that we're doing in our community so that, you know, African Americans can join us in the different things that we do. I think even in the work that we do, a partnership is very empowering, and I think there's opportunity to unite on so many fronts to really address the disenfranchisement that we see across our communities. And so I'm hopeful that this is a start to, you know, continuing to have or to make time and space for these conversations.
Yes, I agree. I think we can continue to do this, and I'm going to check and see if Mama D is back with us. And Mama D, before we go to break, have any last questions for our guest?
Well, first of all, I thought I was supposed to be a guest.
Yes, you know, I didn't know if you were in the travel.
I thought you asked me to be a guest from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., and then you asked me could I wait to be a guest starting at 8 because you wanted to bring in this portion of the program. So now I want to know, am I a caller or a guest? Because the Brown versus Board of Education decision is our history, and our history should be important. 70 years.
So before she leaves, before she leaves, and before you give us that information, I wanted to see if you had anything left to say to her before she leaves.
Well, I believe that, see, when we have in laws being passed to put us down, and this is what the Brown versus Board of Education ruled, to keep the 88 years of keeping the status of the Negro down, keeping us in the caste system, I think I attended
the last African summit, if that was the one that was held at the Harris Y?
I think I remember hearing about that.
But what I wanted to say was bilingual preferred programs, for instance, American English is our mother tongue language. And we're the only ones over here being told, well, you learn somebody else's language. When the 14th Amendment says, if you're not born in America, you must be naturalized. That requires you to read, write, and speak English. But all of these laws being passed, that they are further disadvantaging us because the only language we have and the only country we have is the one that was forced upon us. And so when I'm hearing about the immigrants are doing something, if all these countries and all the immigrants are doing something, but the American African is not included in that international immigration group. And Barbara Jordan, she chaired the immigration reform committee, and she said that immigration would harm us as a people because we would be competing for the same job. Professor Anderson has also said how we are being harmed, and it's not anything personal against a group, but the immigrants, the immigrants that come to this country by choice, they are with a whole family of all the other immigrants that are coming here from all over the world. And we are further being disadvantaged. Now, we have a 70-year anniversary coming up, the Brown versus Board of Education decision, where those six-year-old children are now 76-year-old senior citizens, and it's taken us 70 years to deal with that doubt. Our history is important. When it came to the 400th year of our arrival here, they didn't even mention it on TV as a news byline, didn't say a word about it. And this is the way we are treated because of the, as Marcus Garvey said, others can take the chains off your body, but only you yourself can take them off your brain. And we have not overcome 346 years of federal laws against us as a kidnapped race of people. In 70 years, we haven't overcome it. And we have to be honest with each other. We need to integrate the African Americans and the American Africans. If you come from the continent, you know the land, the language, and something about it, you're an African American. But we are American Africans, and we definitely need to integrate with each other. But first, we have got to integrate with ourselves, and that has not happened.
Well, I think that's probably something that will be addressed at this conference. I don't know if it was addressed at the last one, but definitely those are issues that we're hoping that all groups can talk about. And I think the language issue, now I know there, most people, pretty much everybody who comes to America, they come with their mother tongue, and sometimes English or French might be the national language. But I think when it comes to our education, we do ourselves a disservice if we, as American-born people, only know one language. I just think that the brain works better when we are multilingual, but I know that is an immigrant issue when it comes to having access to education in your language. And if you
don't, then having your child mislabeled as educationally, mentally handicapped or something. But Bamazi, we're going to get more into that history and the anniversary. We're going to take one last break, and I'll give our guest Fasika a chance to say the last word before she leaves
well,
us.
Well, let me just say, our history is important. Now, I was supposed to be your guest. I believe.
Well, hold that thought. You're coming back. You can give us more details, Mama D.
But
coming back after the break. Because I'm gonna let our guest go.
She stayed
longer than I originally said.
She can hold that thought for two hours. And our history is not important, and this is one of our major problems. We disrespect our history and what we are about. We've got a very important history day coming up.
Mama D, I'm trying to give you a chance to talk about it, but I need to take a pause for a minute. So pause, please, so we can come back to you so you can give us the details
on it. The other guest has had an hour and a half.
Hold that thought. So now I have on the screen here the 2024 African Summit Resource Fair, and there's a QR code on the screen. Is there a cost for this event, or people just need to register?
Yes, there's no cost at all, and we'll be providing lunch. So we ask that people register just so that we have a count on how many people we're expecting.
Okay. All right. Well, if you're watching and the QR code is on the screen, you can just point your camera to that and register. And I hope to be there. And I hope that we'll address all of these things. And even and I hope you're there too, Mamadi. I think that it's to share the history and also share the struggles and the triumph and for us to heal the hurt that caused us to end up in this situation in the first place. So I do want to say thank you for being with us this morning and extending your time with us to give us some more insight. Again, that is this coming Saturday, and that is, of course, May 18th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and that is at the University Church, which is located right there in the Hyde Park community at 5655 South University Avenue in Chicago. And if you're in and around the Chicagoland area, we hope you can be there, and we hope you can lend your voice to create some solutions. So thank you so much, Fasika Alem, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you and look forward to being back.
All right.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you so much for all you do.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much, Brother Kareem, for hanging on. And Mama D, you hold tight. We're going to be back after this break.
And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dr. Aisha Kareem, CEO Emeritus for American Muslim 360 Radio. And I want to talk to you about something that strikes at the very heart of our family and community life. It's something that can stay hidden in homes and in communities for years, regardless of our faith, our religion, or our socioeconomic status. I want to talk to you about domestic abuse, violence against women in general, as well as the broader underlying issue of respect for women that the Me Too movement addresses and that helped us to see an even deeper and systemic long-standing disrespect of women at many levels of our society, from the stockroom to the boardroom.
To see real change, though, is to help move these injustices out of the dark and into the light. For that, we're going to need you and me, are a We Too movement in which we say no more. We must also be willing to admit that the problem can exist even in your or my community. So talk to your imam and other counselors. Hold the workshops in your community. Invite in experts to learn more and talk about it in individual conversations. We want respect for our mothers, wives, our daughters, our sisters, and for all of the women in our society. And that means equal protection and equal respect for our intellect, our work, and our total person. So, what are you willing to do? A public service message from the CWSC and AM 360.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim-hosted, from religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM 360, where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
Against us as a group of people. And we're kicking off these initiatives because we want to make history makers of our children. It begins with our students will be interviewing the seniors. The impacted group is age 76 to age 84. If you're 6 years old, the six-year-old children are now 76-year-old senior citizens, and having lived their full life of 70 years, we can finally deal with that doubt and that it was genocide because it caused serious mental harm to Negro children. Not everybody, not black and brown. And when they say people of color, everybody has a color, including the color of snow, which is white. So what we're doing is we're kicking it off a whole year to deal with these issues because we want to repeat the Dahl test and the significance of it. And in addition to that, we want the children, the students, to get Mamie Till Mobley together with Emmett Till on a United States postage stamp, along with the four girls age 11 to 14 that was bombed in the Birmingham church, to get them on a United States postage stamp so that our children will make history. In addition to that, we want the days of respect that culture that visually affirms the three key principles of the American Civil Rights Renaissance of the 1960s on all Bible standpoint, on all American school calendars. Just like St. Patrick's Day is not a holiday, but it's on the school calendar. We want these visually affirmed days of respect that deals with the three key principles of what is called the movement. That 11 years from 1964 to 1965 of marching, picketing, boycotting, protesting, having our children lynched in bonds and blown up in churches, to get back to where we were in 1865 when we had senators and congressmen, and now in 1965, 100 years later, we didn't even have the right to vote because of the terrorism of the Ku Klux Klan and federal laws against us as a race of people, when the Brown versus Board of Education decision says in writing, it segregation laws only existed to keep the status of the Negro down.
And that status is still down today. And because we don't have the language straight. Last August gave the Arab Americans a uniform racial classification. They are now known and will be counted on the census as Middle Eastern or North African. So we need our own uniformity racial classification category as NAA, Indigenous Native American African. If you're here when the country gets here, you are an indigenous person of that country. We've got to get the language straight. And
So, Mama D, let me ask you this question. For those people who, I guess, you know, when our families get fractured, we don't always know how, we can't always trace back how far. So, and we know recent immigrants, they maybe two generations they've been here at the most. But how far back, how many generations back would a person need to be able to verify their and claim that Native, was it Indigenous Native African
Americans? Indigenous Native American Africans.
Indigenous
simple.
Native American
what,
African.
What,
well,
very
how
simple.
Like, two,
there
two,
was nobody.
Two generations, 1900s? What? How
that
far back?
Was, it's very simple. There is no, if your name is Smith, there was no Smith on the continent of Africa. Your name is Jones and Washington.
They might have,
because
they
get
colonialized.
So what I'm saying is you were given the name of your slave owner, and your name is still Smith if your slave owner in the 1860s or the 1690s or whatever, America only has enslavement from 1776 to starting when America got started. So we can't claim reparations from 1619 when it comes to reparations. It's only 80, America kept it going, kept the chattel movable property thing going for 89 years, and then from 1866 to 1954, they put us under segregation laws. And when people come over here, they say, well, you all have been here all these many years. Why haven't you made any progress? Because they don't comprehend the laws that have been against us, 345 years of federal laws against us as a racial group, when 246 of those years, we weren't even a human being. We have not overcome that, and we need to come out of denial, not blaming, and realize the impact of that. They're just talking about the shame of Chicago and the shame of America. They had this series on talking about how they deprived us of owning property by putting in the law. You couldn't sell to a Negro. The first thing that they kept against us was our language barrier. Oh, he's very articulate. This is what you heard in the 60s during part of our struggle was, oh, they're very articulate. Nobody ever sit us down and taught us the English language. We grabbed the words here and there and kept it moving. And they kept it against us if you wasn't very articulate. Joe Louis, I land, I win. We laugh at Ebonics. But that's all we had.
Well, Mama, do you got a caller to chime in on this? You presented a thought. We're going to designate ourselves specifically because of our long-term history here. Let's hear what area code 312-200. You're live on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your thoughts about this topic.
This is Rashid Ali calling from Chicago. I
just want to
be greeted.
Greetings.
I just want to give greetings to everyone, especially Mama D. Mama D, if it's okay, I would like to talk to you. I don't have your number. About a pertinent issue that I think you can help with.
773.
Well,
my thought on this is...
Yeah, I'll text it to you, Rashida, so you have it in your phone. I'll text it to you.
Thank you, very kindly. Is that all the counsel of God is needed, and because it's really something that's purging in our community. And it appears that we are the ones that are being injured. You know, African-American, so-called African-American, is the one being injured again. For example, this is my thought on it. Most of the migrants are being sheltered, while American homeless are and have been homeless, sleeping on the ground and anywhere they could. And the migrants are now all over, scattered all over with tiny houses. Outside the police station, they were put inside instead of sleeping on the concrete or outside the police door as homeless did prior to them coming here. So, in my opinion, we are the ones that are mostly enslaved. I went to Jewel, migrants working, no African-Americans working, because right now they have a new trade. But the migrants are bringing the drugs over and have been doing it for a number of years. It was shown on Channel 11 where they grow it and package it and put it on the plane and bring it to Chicago. So the unemployed, impoverished black man and woman are captured by the drug trade, and so they don't want to work. With the Jewels, person couldn't even speak English, and they're working. People don't want McDonald's jobs and stuff, especially now since the migrants are being prioritized in housing. They're being prioritized in employment. They're being prioritizing all types of accommodations where Americans have been homeless in America for a long time. And the African American, in my opinion, is still back into enslavement. So we're going to have to start focusing. I think that we're going to have to start focusing on our God-given rights and do for ourselves and our community and stop these hate crimes as are among us, because other people are. Their countries, although they are out of the country, are giving our countries money to house and to shelter them. And our mayor today is talking about bringing the migrants over to the south side and putting them into the abandoned houses and facilities that's on the south side. Well, you got senior women that's in the homeless shelter, Americans that's been there. So it's our fault. We can't point the finger at
it. It definitely is a problem for those who have to weather the storm outside and can't get access to resources. You brought up a valid point. We've got to go, but I certainly hope that both of you all attend the African Summit and voice some of these issues that have to do with the resources going to others. And can we all make sure we get our share? And we want to make sure they know about the Board of Education meeting. And when is that? In the seconds we have left, Comedy, for those who want to voice their opinion about the days of respect.
It's Thursday. Board of Education meets on Thursday. I think you can probably get it on the Board of Education station. But as I said, we'll be kicking off
a year
to deal with our history and our young people and get our house in order. Love
and
not ourselves, not in sin of ourselves. We got to twist.
Well, all right. Thank you so much. We're out of time. Thank you so much. Thank you, Brother Kareem, and our American Muslim 360 family. Thank you to our guests. Thank you, Bianca. Thanks for an interesting discussion. Well, we once again have heard some intense conversation. Let us work toward the solution, which is a united decision to create the world we want to see. It's in our power. It's in our hands. Let's make it happen. Thank you so much, Brother Kareem. We appreciate you and all of our listeners on the American Muslim 360 family. And thanks to all of you who are watching and listening. Join us tomorrow for another exciting episode of Nature Based Talk with Angela.
We're at the end of the broadcast of Female Solution. We're grateful for everyone's presence each and every Wednesday morning for the broadcast of the Female Solution. And I'm grateful for the wonderful guests that Sister Naima brings on, sharing with us their insight and their wisdom. This was an excellent broadcast. Praise be to Almighty God. I would like to invite you, if you would, to tune in to American Muslim 360 at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the broadcast of Halal Industries. Halal means that which is good and lawful, do for self. It is hosted by Imam Wali Ayub Bilal and Brother James Bashir. Then I invite you to tune back in at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the broadcast of Narrative Aspirations, hosted by Khalida Abdul-Aziz. Narrative Aspirations, when we aspire, we go higher. Narrative means to use words that are uplifting. Narrative Aspirations. Praise be to Almighty God. We came to you this morning with the greetings of peace. We leave you this morning with the greetings of peace in the Quranic Arabic language of Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. May we remain forever grateful, forever thankful, and grateful for the blessings that Almighty God has given us. We must remain thankful and grateful. I bring you now the voice of Abdul Rahman Hatem. We got to be thankful.
Early in the morning, sail and prayer, seven express proof coffee as I stumble down the stairs, tiptoe by the bedroom where my children sleep. 25 years later, I still pray my Lord their souls to keep. Grab my keys, grab my hat and I head on out the door. Crank up my old pickup truck, get off the work I go. But I gotta be alright,
gotta be alright,
the best that I can. Try and make a difference, cause that's just who I am. I've gotta be strong,
gotta be strong,
and let a helping hand along the way. Try and make a difference each and every single day. But you gotta be thankful,
gotta be thankful,
gotta be grateful for my life and all the things he's given me that make my life my life. For the warm rays of sunshine, stars that light the night, friends I've left forever, and my children and my wife. Now there's a little boy who lives down the street who wants to grow to be a man, but life is rough and the streets are tough and he tries to understand. He said, "Miss, can you help me? Can you lend a helping hand? Tell me why the life's so rough. Can you help me understand?"
Well, I think about the days gone by and the things my daddy said, and the wisdom that he shared with me still lingers in my head. He said, you gotta be all right. You gotta do the best that you can. Try and make a difference in any way you can. You gotta be strong.
Gotta be strong.
And lend a helping hand along the way. Try and make a difference each and every single day. But you gotta be thankful.
Gotta be thankful.
You gotta be grateful for your life and all the things he's given you that makes your life your life. For the warm rays of sunshine and the stars that light the night, and friends that last forever, and your children and your wife. Go back to colors, and I sing the day's last prayer, asking for his blessing for people everywhere, and our sons and daughters who fight in foreign lands, trying to make a difference for their family. But they gotta be alright. They gotta do the best that they can. Try to make a difference any way they can. They've got to be strong.
Gotta be strong.
And lend a helping hand along the way. Try and make a difference each and every single day. But they gotta be thankful. They gotta be grateful for their lives and all the things he's given them that make their life for the warm rays of sunshine and the stars that light the night, the friends that last forever, and their children and their wives. Yeah, they gotta be thankful.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.